You're listening to excerpts from the first annual 1K Race to the Bottom, a demonstration that took place on May 21, 2002 in Washington, D.C. It brought together activists from two worlds whose work is inextricably intertwined by corporate globalization, those working on domestic economic justice issues and those working on global economic justice issues. The Race to the Bottom was organized by the Mobilization for Global Justice and the National Campaign for Jobs and Income Support. The National Campaign for Jobs and Income Support is a coalition of grassroots organizations in 40 states that seeks to advocate progressive anti-poverty policies at the state and national level. You can find them online at www.nationalcampaign.org. The Mobilization for Global Justice is a D.C.-based organization made up of groups and individuals focused on the growing problem of corporate globalization in today's world. You can find them online at www.globalizethis.org. The demonstration highlighted the parallels between structural adjustment policies promoted by members of the World Economic Forum and the erosion of the safety net in the United States since Congress passed welfare reform in 1996.
So I can describe it to you. I'm a woman who's dressed in a business suit and white, and that would put me pretty close to the head of the race. But since women only make 73 cents to the dollar on what men make, no matter where they are on the food chain, I have a sign that says women get 73 cents to a man's dollar. And I have to carry, like barbells, the coins above my head. And let's see. There's a quarter that has racism across the top and in Money We Trust. The penny, one of my three pennies here, says in men we trust rather than God, and marks the penny with sexism. Let's see.
This one says poverty on it.
Poverty.
We've got a third penny over here. Another one of those.
There's a dime that says profit.
Profit.
And the diamond says exploitation.
So in this Race to the Bottom, do you think you start with the starters, the head starters, or the predetermined winners?
Well, as a white woman in a business suit, I'm around the head start, like pretty close to the men in the front, except I just can never make it to the men in the front.
You would be a predetermined winner.
Yeah, I would never be a predetermined winner. No, not with the coochie.
I'm currently one of the richest, if not the richest person here.
You are?
Yeah, I made billions. And I'll tell you how I did it. Government contracts.
Yeah?
Does that sound familiar? Remind you anybody? Ex-presidential candidate. Ross Perot did the same thing. But, you know, you have to start with $1 million, get to know a couple of politicians who are pliable. We call it the trade pliable, suggestible. Start taking their secretaries out, take them to the factory, you know, that kind of thing. Pretty soon you got a good, really good investment going for you. And, you know, after that, you start really cleaning in. What I'm trying to do is get the contract for the pipeline across Afghanistan. But I thought I would come here and mingle with, you know, the world's economic forum people because they know how to have a good party. You know, it's only $20,000. I've already made my money. I'm not worried about losing money. I'm making money. And I want to get that pipeline. You know, if I can give the best parties, you know, get people sauce and all that kind of stuff, I got the best chance. And, you know, they're never going to go hungry in my house. And there's plenty of contributions anyway, soft, hard, whatever, I can get to all the campaigns across the country, both parties.
That's great. You know. But that'll explain why you're in a tuxedo and sitting. You're not just at the predetermined winners. You're ahead of the predetermined winners.
Oh, of course.
This race to the bottom.
Oh, yeah. Why take a chance? Yeah, I've already taken my chances, but I did bet on a winning politician with my first $1 million, and it really paid off, and I went on from there. And it's like horses, you know. Some people are good with horses, I'm good with politicians.
Well, it also sounds like it's probably easier to get to the head of the line if you start out at the head of the line.
Well, I did have kind of a head start, yeah. I have to admit.
That silver spoon you're carrying,
yeah,
right there.
Yeah, this comes from the great houses of England, the great country houses of England, from one of them. I don't know if it's, what do you call it, Chatham or whatever. I don't think that was it. Well, belonged to some duke at one time. It's hand-beaten silver. And I can still taste the sauce. You know, to convince me how well it held the soup, dipped it in, I can still taste it. delicious. Oh, there's our president. Listen, you helped me with that pipeline, right? You're going to help me with the pipeline across Afghanistan. I'm going to make sure that you have the best silver that you've been... That is that good silver. I'm real sorry. I'm going to make sure that you saw great house, country houses of England. You're going to have the best. You're going to have Henry VIII is going to be on, his press is going to be on here soon. But you give me that pipeline, right?
Billy, the big stone Billy over there. Yeah, well, that's trying to work, okay? So get off my back, all right? So, up on that roof, that chamber of commerce, there's a little white tent. Little white tent. That's where all the right businessmen are right now. And if you look up there carefully, you'll see the World Economic Forum folks. We are the most entertainment they've gotten all day, all right? They keep peeking over and saying hi, and so... I guess I have a message for them. I like that sign there. It says it all right there. But what the message is, WEF, we won't go away. All right, can I hear it again? WEF, we won't go away. WEF, we won't go away. WEF, we won't go away. All right, I think they might have heard that. Maybe. Okay, now, guys, loosen up. It's a Catholic shuffle. Because I'm watching the news again. Strip search. On 8th Street in Washington, D.C. It's the sweatshop.
Well, that thing is huge.
Yeah, get that thing in position. You need to get in position. Tie up those workers in the sweatshop. Sewing away your life to make fancy suits for like the one I'm wearing right here. Yeah, thank you. We won't be all equal until we all own suits. Yes, you reap what you sow. Not.
Sewing machine. Come around to the side. You can see the tension rate starts at high, then we go to very high, and then we go over the top here. That's when people start bleeding. But it's too bad. They don't have medical insurance, so they can't take care of their hands. They just work through the pain. They're trained to do that. We train them well. And then we have this lots of crazy stitches going on in here. Essentially, what we're going to do today is we're going to tie people up with the yarn from this giant sweatshop sewing machine and slow people down in cheap labor and no medical care.
Okay, well, that's hardly seems fair in the race to the bottom.
Hardly seems fair?
It hardly seems fair to tie people up and try to keep them down.
Keep them down?
Why would you do that?
Well, that's the whole point in the race to the bottom. Because, unfortunately, that is really happening, right? I mean, everyone's getting... We're all hitting these glass ceilings. We're all... well, I'm not going to say all. The ruling classes are not definitely hitting any of those ceilings. But the working class, you know, the level's in there. You got the hard laborers and the workshop, the sweatshop laborers making jack baloney for the profits of the CEOs. And here in America, we're kind of privileged enough to have enough money to buy these items.
Uh-huh.
And we really don't have much choice either in the perspective of it all. And we go ahead and we buy what we need, sneakers, hats, clothes. And unfortunately, not enough of us come to the awareness where that stuff is generated and produced and then delivered to. And so hopefully this will shed some light on that.
Okay. Well, it's kind of curious, sweatshops, but they're only in foreign countries, right?
Oh, no, they're all over the world, including right here in the U.S.
My name is Beth Brockland, and I'm with the National Campaign for Jobs and Income Support. We're here today with partnering with the Mobilization for Global Justice, the new partnership, domestic anti-poverty activists and global anti-poverty activists, really making the link between poverty at home and abroad.
Now that's kind of unusual, I think. It seems like the two have been mostly separated in their different.
I think so too, and I think this is a great hope for the future that these two movements will start to converge and people will start to make the link, because these two issues are totally inextricably linked, and it's important that we see the connections and, you know, move forward towards a more holistic view towards justice in the future.
Can you talk about how you see those things as linked from the perspective of your organization?
Sure. So we work on domestic welfare reform legislation. And as you know, right now Congress is debating changes to the 1996 welfare reform law, which has done very little to reduce poverty in the United States, has put a lot of families into incredible hardship as a result of these inflexible time limits, restrictions on eligibility, you know, tens of thousands of immigrant families cut off the rolls in 1996 just because of the date of, you know, that they had come into the country. A lot of these punitive policies passed in 1996 have resulted in erosion of the safety net that have prevented, hundreds of thousands of needy families from getting help when they need it. And this year, with welfare reform being taken up again in Congress, our organization has come together with anti-poverty activists all around the country to really have a voice for low-income people in Washington, D.C. And our members who are here today wanted to send a message to Congress that we need policies that help end poverty in America, not just push people off the rolls.
So, can you talk a little about the mobilization for global justice? And I mean, I think this is absolutely fascinating to me that this kind of linkage is starting to happen, because it's so obvious to a lot of us, but I think it hasn't been that obvious to a lot of other people.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, you guys standing in front of, you know, the Chamber of Commerce and the WEF meeting, is that unusual for you, or to be in front of the WEF as a target?
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think, again, I think this is one of the first times that these linkages are being made, which is a real, a real positive sign for the future. I think we see them linked because in the same way that at the WEF meeting there are powerful people that are not in contact with the people that the policies are affecting, likewise in Congress, many decision makers aren't listening to the people who are being most affected by the policies their decisions impact as well. With economic globalization, jobs are moving out of our country into the developing countries where labor is cheap. Workers' rights are not protected. Likewise, here in the United States, there are fewer jobs available for folks in the low-wage labor market, high unemployment for people without education and skills. work requirements on welfare recipients, and you know the jobs just aren't there. And just as in some of these sweatshops that the organizations like Mobilization for Global Justice are protesting and fighting against, we're fighting here at home workfare programs, like the work experience program in New York City, that force welfare recipients to work for less than the minimum wage, work off their benefits, without access to worker protection, or you know wage-based benefits like the earned income tax credit, Social Security, and you know I think that there are some real obvious linkages between the two issues, and it's just important for us to continue making these linkages to build a stronger movement in the future.
Great. Thanks a lot,
sure.
And good luck.
Thanks.